Welcome to the Student Housing Insight Podcast, where we are putting you in touch with the people who bring student housing to life. This is your host, Wesley Dees, and want to remind everybody that this episode is sponsored by Conservis, the student housing utility experts. If you're still pulling your hair out trying to do reconciliations of utilities, dealing with putting the electricity back in the property's name and the other utilities and vice versa, reach out to Conservis, do yourself a favor, and let them do that. It's so worth the little bit of money that it takes to do that. So again, this episode is sponsored by Conservis. Speaking of things that make you pull your hair out, I've got an interesting guest today. I did an interview week before last, with a state representative, North Carolina state representative, I should say, John Bradford. John entered the North Carolina legislature about 6 years ago. Didn't really talk to him about anything that had to do with legislature, other than the fact that there was a utility bill. I just made that connection. So there was a bill that he introduced in the legislature in regards to utilities that affect student housing operators. Basically, what is already allowed for electricity and being able to be billed back, he has been able to, the bill that he introduced and got passed through back in October, that is now extended to natural gas and other utilities. So we spent a little bit of time talking about that. But the reason that I asked him to come on is because I was introduced to John maybe a couple of months ago from someone we know in common that is in student housing. And he said, Wes, you got to talk to John. You know, he's got something that he's been using in the single family rental space, that as well as conventional multifamily, that quite honestly would solve a lot of problems for student housing, and specifically student housing that allows for pets, as well as any housing provider that has to deal with some of the other service animal issues. And a lot of times you really don't know if the service animal is servicing anything. Anyway, John's product has helps solve that, as well as just generally with pets. And, you know, one of the things that, for those of you that may be somewhat new to student housing, accepting pets right now is in most markets accepted. It used to not be something in student housing that was commonly accepted because, face it, it's college students. They're typically immature adults that, you know, are looking to have a pet for a lot of different reasons other than, you know, giving that pet a home and nurturing that pet. And, you know, it's anyway, I just won't even get into all of that. But you really have to, regardless if it's a, you know, 20-year-old who's living away from mom and dad the first time, or if it's a, you know, 40-year-old that has got a new puppy, there's a lot of little things that go into the ownership of a pet that you would really like to know about that resident before you accept their pet. One of them is, hey, how old is the dog? Or how old is the cat? How long have they owned the cat or the dog? Breeds, that kind of thing. I mean, there's been a lot of discussion on breeds and what that actually really means as far as a guard dog breed. And when I spoke with John, he really was able to clarify a lot of things. Now, he's been able to take his legislature experience combined with the fact that he also owns a property management company. They focus on the single family rental model that so basically single family homes that makes up his portfolio. So he obviously recognized the problem with pets, especially dealing with single family homes, and said, you know what, I think there's an answer. So he took his legislature side along with bringing in both HUD and attorneys and specifically veterinarians. And with the veterinarians, he worked with them to really come up with an algorithm to be able to rank pets and pet owners. And that actually allows, being able to do that and get that ranking actually allows a property owner to really look back and say, okay, is this a type of pet owner and a type of pet that we want in our community? And anyway, he does a fabulous, a much more fabulous job at explaining it than I do. And it's really great to hear his passion for this as well. So he's going to talk about that along with this utility thing in North Carolina. For those of you who operate student housing in North Carolina and have natural gas as a utility being supplied to your residents, that may be of importance to you as well. But anyway, his company is called PetScreening.com. Go check them out. I'm going to go ahead and hit play, and we'll catch you on the other side. Welcome to the podcast, John. How are you?
Hey, Wes. I'm great today. Thanks for having me.
So, John, we had a mutual friend that introduced us about a month ago, and it's been really interesting finding out your story and your background, both from a personal side as well as from a business side. So, one thing we've got in common is we both have four kids. I've got three girls and a boy. You've got three girls.
I do. My oldest is a boy, and then I have three girls. In fact, we went for a third and got identical twins. So that's how we got to four.
At least you got it all out of the way.
Good point.
Very good point. John, you are also a representative in the North Carolina legislature. Tell us a little bit about who you represent.
Yeah, sure. So I represent Northern Mecklenburg County. It's called District 98. In the House of Representatives, I'm the Deputy Majority Whip, and I also chair regulatory reform, and I chair local government.
Great. Now, we also have a huge constituency of Clemson University.
Go Tigers.
Alumni. So, congratulations on getting into the ACC championship.
Thank you. And it is noteworthy that I'm the only Clemson Tiger in the North Carolina State Legislature.
Really?
Both in the Senate and the House. I'm the only one. And I must share with you that when we won the national championship last year, when we were having our swearing-in ceremony earlier this year, there was a sort of a moment of silence. Not just we were at ease, if you will. And I hit my button. And I got up and, of course, gave a shout out to the Tigers. And the Speaker of the House, who's a huge Chapel Hill fan, called me out of order.
That's great. Yeah, love Clemson. Love to see the successes they've had. And glad that loss came earlier in the year.
Me too.
At the end of the year. So
for sure.
Hopefully, this time next week, we're talking about them going to the playoffs.
Absolutely.
Well, hey, I brought you in today to talk about your company and how it services property management companies and pet owners. But, you know, as we were talking about your political background, and I was talking about some of the frustrations that North Carolina has given student housing providers in regards to utilities, because, you know, the for student housing, well, everybody listens to this show knows what the issue is with utility bill backs. So I won't spend any time explaining, but I thought I was educating you on, hey, here's a big headache. And lo and behold, you're actually telling me, well, Wes, we got that solved for you last month.
That's
so
right.
I want you to talk a little bit about the House bill that you actually sponsored,
yes.
I believe, and what that does, so that some of those headaches that the student housing operators were dealing with in North Carolina, it may be an update to some of them. They may not have heard a lot about it. So go ahead and let us know about that.
Yeah. So in the North Carolina House, I'm one of the few, what I'd say, non-attorneys. I'm a business guy, of course. We'll talk about it later, but I come from the property management industry. Granted, I'm on more of the single family side, but I've become the go-to guy for real estate and housing. And I was asked to see if this particular topic interested me. So, and it did. And the bill is House Bill 799, and it was called Utility Billing for Lessors. And really what the bill did, and I was successful, just so you know, in getting it passed in the House, and then I carried it over to the Senate, and we got it passed out of the Senate, and I think we got it passed unanimously, and it was ratified into law by Governor Cooper in July. So this is a law now, so it's passed. But what it does is it allows anyone with more than four units. So this would, in your world for student housing, this would be bedrooms where you have occupants that are living together. You can actually leave the utilities on, and the utilities are really across the board. It's electricity, we've added water, and we've added natural gas. And what it allows the housing provider to leave these utilities in their name, and they can bill the occupants, the residents, back for it. You know, they cannot be evicted if they don't pay this. That was one of the big issues that we had to make sure couldn't happen. But I understand, as a property manager, having a property management background, how important it is to maintain control of the utilities so you can turn the units faster when the occupants move out. And so we were able to get that legislation passed, and it's a big win. And for any housing provider that has more than four units, they're now allowed to do that. And there are some services out there that will do it for you. You can outsource it. And there's, I mean, obviously you have to submit an application to be able to do this, but now it stops the utility commission from trying to treat you like a utility, because we're an oligopoly. We're a managed utility system. And therefore we had to get this legislation to clarify it. And it was my bill. So I'm happy to bring that to the table for your listeners.
Yeah. Yeah. Now if you could just get Colorado and California to accept it.
Well, hey, they can take the legislation. You need to just cut and paste it and send it to them.
We'll call our folks at Conservice and see if they can see if their legal counsel can pass it on.
So. There you go.
Well, hey, again, thanks for that. I appreciate, you know, you're already coming in to as a hero to a lot of the listeners because of that.
Happy to help. It was a common sense issue, so for me it was very easy to carry because I really understood it.
Well, and so let's talk about another common sense thing, because when you and I started talking about your business, PetScreen.com, first thing that came to my mind is, why in the hell have we not come up with something like this already?
Right.
And, you know, and your service is definitely there to help, you know, management companies. And I'll let you explain what it is. But it's really to, I think, the most benefit, you know, goes to the pet owners. But on the management side, you know, we're constantly having to deal with, you know, is this pet really going to fit into this community? You know, we have to look at breed restrictions and those kind of things. And then there's another big topic that we're all dealing with, which is, you know, service animals and being able to really validate, you know, is this a service animal? And I think a lot of managers are just really scared to even deal with the issue and just end up, you know, kind of going with whatever the applicant or tenant says. So I wanted to bring you on to talk a little bit more about pet screening does,
sure.
PetScreening.com, and you know, how folks can connect with you on that. So go ahead.
Well, so I want to start with my background. So I've been in property management industry for 13 years. I used to serve on our industry national board for 8 years. So I understand property management. And so as a third party provider of housing, we like to say there's two P's in the industry that can cause property damage. It's people and pets. Pets, the second P. At the same time, though, statistically speaking, about 58% of applicants have a pet. And we know this because we've been measuring it for quite some time. So over half the people that will be looking at a vacant property have a pet. And the average pet ownership is 1.3 pets per person. So having a pet is really a way of life in today's society. That said, I took my frustration with dealing with pets and assistance animals, and I combined it with my legislative background. In the state of North Carolina, we already talked about the utility issue. I've really grown an expertise around kind of the property management, real estate guy. In the chamber, but also assistance animals. Even though this is a federal set of statutes, there are still a fair number of issues that pop up in North Carolina regarding assistance animals, which are service, companion, therapy, you pick the buzzword. But they're coming to my plate, if you will. And so I took those two things and created this idea that I was going to go develop a software product to help the industry. And it is called PetScreening.com. It's a no charge service to housing providers. So there's really no downside. And what we do is we screen household pets, and that would be your everyday, what we'll call Fluffy, right? Your dog or cat. And when I say we screen them, we really, Wes, we're looking at a couple of factors. We're not just looking at the animal itself, but we're also looking at the owner's care of that animal. Because just like children, a pet is a product of its environment. And so if a pet owner is
about that, you're talking about how they, you know, when do they clean up?
Bingo. Do they pick up? Yeah. And so our tool goes through a series of questions, and we've built a really mighty team. We have a legal team. We've built a question set that these pet owners have to answer. And it really hits the right topics for property managers and housing providers. So it's waste pickup. It's keeping your animal on a leash at all times. It's going, making sure you take it to the veterinarian regularly. It's asking questions about the behavior of the pet. In other words, has it ever been quarantined? trained? If so, why? Has it ever bit a person? Has it ever bit an animal? And then, of course, we collect all the statistics on the pet itself. So photos of the pet, shot records, proof of those shot records, is it microchipped or not? And we take all that data and we run it through a very complex algorithm that we've built, and we've worked on this for months. And the algorithm actually produces, very similar to a credit score for a human, we create a pet score for the pet. And that pet score is only for the housing provider to see. And what we're seeing, Wes, is housing providers are using that scoring mechanism to set variable-based pricing for their pet policies. So if a particular community charges pet rent, they can charge more or less pet rent based on the score. And it's really just based around risk and factors. And it's amazing how it's working. We, you know, because it's no charge, because it provides the scoring, which drives new revenue streams for providers. And then the other side of the coin are assistance animals. One of the other offerings that we do, again, at no charge, is we actually validate assistance animal status. So Wes, what that means is when someone comes to a particular community or an investor's asset and says, hey, I have a German Shepherd that's a companion animal, that particular investor can send them over to pet screening and make them go through our process. And we have a legal team that reviews every single application on a case-by-case basis, and we're making sure that it falls within the Fair Housing Act guidelines, which is under HUD. And if it doesn't, then we will ask for more information until we get what we need to recommend the animal, because these are not pets. These are now animals, which HUD views as an assistive device to this particular individual's quality of life. The challenge is, though, we're seeing more and more people try to fictitiously bring in documents to skirt the no pet policy, yeah, or perhaps a no guard dog breed policy. And our tool is helping providers across the board sort of wade through the minutia. And what's important is it's taking this headache off of their property managers and their asset managers' plates. They don't have to do it anymore.
Yeah.
We do it all at no charge. And the reality is it's working. I was just measuring some things before your show. 32% of the, and this has been since we've launched, 32% of the applications that have come through for an assistance animal. So that service, companion, you know, again, you pick the buzzword. 32% have been requested to submit more documentation and they have disappeared.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So that tells you about one out of every three may or may not be legitimate. You know, we don't accuse anybody of anything. That's not our job. What we are doing is making sure that the documentation that they have is legitimate. And under HUD, they call it reasonable, credible, and verifiable.
Yeah.
And our reviewers are literally calling those providers, making sure those letters were really issued. And also, some of these certificates that come through, I mean, someone paid money for this certificate that they think is very valid, but the reality is it's not valid.
The type of ESA type.
Yeah, so when you see the certificate that has the dog standing on the podium with his chest poked out with a registration number, for example, somebody has paid money for that, and in their world, in all fairness to them, they don't know. They believe that that makes their dog an emotional support animal.
Yeah.
But under the FHA Section 504, there is no such thing as a registration process. And someone has to have the confidence to say that. And because of my legislative background and being close to this, you know, we have the confidence, we have the right team, and we're doing that for providers. And it's been an amazing journey so far.
Yeah, so let's talk about, because, you know, a lot of the things that you, you know, I've gone through the process. But when you showed me the other day, and a lot of the same questions are, you know, I've seen them on, you know, pet applications for occupancy anyway. And, you know, and it asks about, you know, like you said, has a dog ever bitten anybody? We know how they're going to answer that question generally. And so I guess kind of, you know, what I think everybody's going to first kind of scrutinize is, you know, what does it matter if we ask these questions or not? What does it really do?
Right. Well, and that's a great question. And this is all about really creating a layer of liability for the organization, right, and for the asset owner. The fact that you ask the question is a great start, right? Our product, not only does it ask the question, but because we've used a legal team to build it, we actually have it worded like an affidavit. And before they submit it, they have to certify and attest that everything they're submitting is true and accurate. And let's just play along that they have lied on some of the questions. Mm-hmm. The housing provider, from a liability standpoint, can hold their head high that they ask the questions. And we can't, let's face it, if people want to beat the system, they're going to try to find out a way. The difference is there's now a codified record, and it's consistent and standard, which is why housing providers are really embracing this product, because from community to community, from property manager to property manager, it seems to be done differently. Even though their intent is one way, it's very easy for someone who just started last week to try to tackle one of these issues and not do it right. If you constantly use PET screening to do it, we're asking the same question set every single time, and everything's a digital record. There's no more PDF paperwork. It's all real time, and it's at your fingertips. And the other thing that we're doing is you can actually, and this is pretty neat, Wes, I think your listeners will enjoy it. We're creating the first national database of incident reporting. What I mean by that is if someone has a pet that they have leased to and they have a pet profile because they went to petscreening.com, and at the end of that lease, if that animal has tore up the property, if let's say it's a cat, and has urinated everywhere and they have to spend $1,200 in replacing all the carpet, the housing provider can log into the tool, go to that cat, log an incident report of property damage, and that property damage will follow that cat and that owner for the next user.
Yeah, that's huge, because it comes back to the same thing with evictions of people.
Bingo. It's like a background check.
Yeah. I mean, the industry really got hot and heavy, especially through the apartment associations of, hey, let's make sure we're communicating to each other about, residents that don't pay rent.
Bingo.
And the same thing has been coming up with pets. So having that type of database is going to be huge.
And that extends to pet bite. So if, let's say, 6 months into a lease, there's a reported pet bite and it is legitimate, you could actually report a pet bite incident for a particular pet in the tool. That will also follow. And we're adding now, as we speak, an unauthorized pet incident, because if you find an unauthorized pet, of course, the first thing you're going to do is either ask them to remove it, or you're going to charge them probably an unauthorized pet fee and then make them go to petscreening.com and fill out an application. Mm-hmm. But then you can come back and report that that owner had the unauthorized pet to begin with. So down the road, another property manager user could see that there's a history with that owner of bringing in unauthorized pets. So just the power of information and data and sharing that amongst the housing community is monster.
Now, you've got you illustrated me or demoed for me kind of a dashboard for property managers.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about, so you can go on and you can make these incident reports become part of that pet's record. To actually find out, to be on the other side of receiving an application and putting that in, give me a little bit of how that is. I mean, because they could always use another pet name or even lie about the breed or something like that. And where I'm going.
Oh, I do. Sure.
On,
yeah.
On the clarification, on how you're able to certify things. Dealing with podcasts, we have to kind of set the tea on.
No worries. I mean, that's a great question. So, I mean, think of a microchip. Not every pet that comes through the system is microchipped, but a fair number of what I'd say responsible pet owners are microchipping their animals. Mm-hmm. And I want to be able to, in a moment, we'll talk about the benefit of the tool to the pet owner, because that's as big as the help to the property management side, the housing side. But for the housing provider, when an animal is microchipped, it's like a social security number for a pet. So that's one way to track. The other thing is we have when they actually submit payment for the application, which is the burden of the actual pet owner, we have the last address, which matches the credit card. We have the pet's name. So we have data, just like in a background check. If your name is John Smith, bless your heart, you're going to have lots of things that get pulled against you. Yeah. So what the background companies do is they try to triangulate similar address or similar counties, and in our case, we're triangulating what kind of pet is it, dog, cat type, is there a pet name, who's the owner's name, where do they live last, is there a microchip, and there's enough data there to at least warn somebody there's a possible match, right? Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to suggest that people can't always bait the system, but it is there to help.
And the pet owner has to upload a picture as well, right?
Yeah, so yeah, the pet owner uploads. We ask for two photos, a forward-facing photo of the pet and then a sideways photo of the pet for perspective. They have to upload shot records, for example. They can do PDFs, JPEGs, whatever. And by the way, they don't have to upload anything if they don't want, but their scoring is reflective of how much they participate in the application.
Right.
That's the whole idea. If they leave it you know, blank, they're going to get a very, very low score and a housing provider is going to naturally deny them. Pets are not a protected class. Therefore, you can turn them down for any reason.
Yeah.
Now, on the assistance animal side, I do want to clarify, we don't score assistance animals. That's irrelevant. What we are looking for is that they meet those tests under FHA, HUD. So the scoring is really only applicable to the household pets, but that's about 92% of the total applications that come in. About 8% are assistance animals.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned the legal process that you went through, and I know that you were able to speak with HUD and get some direction from them on some things, or at least understood where they were not going to direct you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
yeah, we've all dealt with HUD. We understand that. You mentioned that veterinarians were involved in creating this algorithm. Can you give us a little bit of background on how that works?
So let's talk about HUD. So HUD is an agency. They interpret policy. They don't make it. That's a congressional issue. I have been to Washington, D.C. I've met with HUD. I've had conference calls with HUD. You know, I've never even asked HUD to endorse anything. It's not about that. They won't. I wouldn't put them in that position. Being a state lawmaker, government can't do that.
Yeah.
However, what I did quickly see is that HUD is really leaning on the adjudication process to help solve what I call the complexity. The challenge is, adjudication is expensive, and who wants to be in the middle of a lawsuit? So, you know, what we're doing is we're using the guidelines that are set forth by HUD and using that with our legal team to make those types of decisions. And it's most certainly working. And we continue to ask HUD for more clarity, and we will always do that. On the veterinarian side, we used a veterinary consultant just to help us with some of the statistics. So, for example, when we do the algorithm, the old adage that a big dog should be more than a little dog doesn't necessarily stand up because, you can have a big dog that's 13 years old and lethargic,
yeah,
and then a little dog that's full of energy. And I'll pick on my dog. I have an Australian Shepherd. She's 4 years old and she's very, very active. So when we talk to the veterinarian consultant, we look at breeds, not just from a guard dog perspective, but we also look at energy levels, because a very hyper dog during a thunderstorm could run around, scratch her floors. So the vet helped us look at everything from maturity, like in terms of, well, what age should we be concerned about, to sex, to what, I mean, they're just things that I never even thought about, Wes.
Yeah.
And the veterinarian kind of opened our eyes to some things. And all that kind of went into this sort of think tank to create a proprietary and very effective algorithm. And our scoring is very easy. We use a very similar to Google that does 1 to 5 stars. We do 1 to 5 paws. So a 5 paw score is very hard to achieve. It really is. Those are not handed out like candy.
Yeah.
So a 3 paw dog or a 3 paw cat is not uncommon. But if there's a 3 paw, there's some sort of risk with it. It could be age of the dog, could be a young dog, it could be a hyper dog, and if it's a guard dog breed, we have probably, Wes, the most comprehensive guard dog breed list built into the tool, because we have cross-checked guard dog breeds from veterinarians to housing providers to articles on the internet that are out there from what I'd say reputable sources. And if it's a guard dog breed, our scoring takes that into consideration. We never, what I would say, accept or decline a pet. We just give it a score, and the housing provider uses the score based on their policies. So everyone can set their own policies based on the scoring, including revenue.
Gotcha. Is there, having the service in play, have you had any customers on the housing side that it's helped them out with insurance rates?
You know, I haven't honestly heard anything about helping them, but we do get a lot of feedback that the insurance companies are really going to be interested in this product. We've obviously been trying to fill the funnel with just housing providers. I will tell you, just this week I was sending out, we call them win lists. I send wins out to housing providers just as an example to show them any assistance animals, for example, that came through and was asked for more information and then they disappeared. Mm-hmm. And for every one that doesn't rent a property and brings this assistance animal, in my opinion, it's a win, right? Because if it's legitimate, they should have their documentation and it wouldn't be a problem.
Yeah.
And it's amazing the number of wins. And when you see 32% of the applications, the people are disappearing when they're requested to give more data, that tells you there's something there.
Yeah.
I do want to say, though, that there is a real group of individuals that need these animals. And for those people, I even had an assistance animal owner, I guess it was 2 weeks ago, that said she loved this tool. And I said, well, why? And she gave me a little quote that we could use, and I don't have it with me, but her point was, I just felt comfortable giving you my records because, Wes, our tool is HIPAA compliant, meaning we take the medical records and we protect it.
Yeah.
So the housing provider doesn't have to worry about some prescription letter from a doctor floating around their office.
Yeah.
The only way they can see the medical records through our tool, and only certain people at the management provider can even see it. Yeah. And that's based on who gives them access. And exactly. You can't forward it to anybody, because the power of the tool is you can forward the pet profile to your maintenance team, for example. So if your maintenance team's out doing work at a property, you can forward a pet profile to a maintenance provider. They can click on the link while they're at their property and very quickly see what kind of pet it should be. But what you don't want them seeing is, if it's an assistance animal, you don't want them seeing the medical record, right? Yeah. So there's some real security built in, which is really a big win for housing providers, because we're kind of saving them from themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. No, not kidding. Yeah. I mean, that opens up a whole nother level of need for this product is... One, we don't want to just keep up with the paperwork.
Absolutely.
We really don't want to keep up with, you know, medical paperwork and
for sure.
Tenants file. So that's great.
That's a real issue. And it's an issue that most housing providers haven't really stopped to think about.
Yeah.
But now that they're aware of it and go, wait a minute, every time we take a letter, we need to put this behind two servers. We need to file protect it. What's happening is most providers are PDFing it, uploading it to a property management system. They're exposed. This product will help you from doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's great. So let's talk about the pet owner a little bit.
Yes.
And what they get out of it. Now, this is no cost to the
housing provider,
correct. But it is a cost to the,
the applicant,
to the pet owner. So tell us a little bit about what that is and how that's structured.
Yeah, so great question. Well, first of all, if it's an assistance animal, there is no charge whatsoever to the assistance animal owner, period.
Yeah.
If it's a household pet, we charge a $20 fee for the application if they have one pet. And if they have an additional pet, it's $15. Now, we do a revenue share back with the housing provider. So not only is it free to the housing provider, but we're actually sending rebate checks back to the housing provider. For every $20 we collect, we have a rebate amount that we share. And for every $15 we collect, we have a rebate. And I call that office fund money, because that
helps with the holiday party.
It helps with holiday parties, or it even helps having events at your communities for pet owners.
Yeah.
You can have a special, you know, pet wash one day and pay a company to come in and do it.
Yeah.
So you can use it however you want to. But the pet owner actually gets something great here, because for responsible pet owners, this digital profile is a record of everything about their pet. Shot records, photos, microchip information, all at their fingertips. And for what I would call the active responsible pet owner, if they travel, let's say they love going to campgrounds. Well, campgrounds require, they're pet friendly, but Wes, they require, a lot of them require to see a rabies certificate. Well, I don't know about you, but I don't carry my rabies certificate with me in my wallet. So what happens is, if you have a pet profile, you log in and a pet owner can forward their pet profile with a click of a button and just having an email address, and can send it to anyone they want, a dog walker, a dog groomer, a bed and breakfast place, a vacation homeowner, and say, hey, here's my pet. Here's a picture of it. Here's my rabies shots, and can do it with one click and an email address, and it's done.
Is it, just to go back to that, kind of that security question that we were talking about earlier, when it emails to, say that, RV park manager, is it emailing them a link to that?
Yeah, everything is done digitally. So we call it a pet profile link. It's just a unique URL for the pet profile. So what'll happen is a nice little email will pop up in that recipient's email box, and it'll say a pet profile has been shared with you. And you click on the link, and a digital pet profile will come up with the dog's name, the breed, the weight, their veterinarian information, their shot history, their records, their photos, their microchip. And I think about what happened with all the hurricanes. People were fleeing Florida and Texas. And if you saw the American Red Cross, they're like, grab your pet files. Not a lot of people have a pet file, quite frankly. Well, if you have this tool, you have a digital pet file all the time.
Yeah.
So if you took your dog with you to, let's say, Missouri to get away from Texas, and you're staying with friends, and your dog gets out, well, very quickly, you can access and get photos of your dog. And you could probably go to Facebook and grab a photo of your dog, but you have it at your fingertips. You can get their microchip information. You can get everything you need if you use the tool.
Yeah.
And so we call it, it's portable. So for the pet owner, they might pay a, quote, application fee, but they're actually getting something out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's one other aspect, if we have just another second here, renewals. When housing providers, they might keep someone for 3 years and it has a pet. what happens is they never revisit the pet after they move in.
Yeah.
They'll always look at the comps. They'll do a walkthrough. This tool, every year, the pet owner has to go back in and renew their application and recodify all the questions, because a lot of things, Wes, can go wrong in a year. That dog could have bitten someone. And you know what? It is the responsibility of the housing provider to make sure they're having a safe environment. So they need to ask those questions. And so what we see a lot of housing providers doing right now is anybody that's renewing, if they have a pet, they're making them go do a pet profile, because they want to go and get this on the record. Yeah. So this is also revisiting pets after they move in, because when someone moves in January and they have a 12-year-old dog, come August, that dog, you know, might pass away. Yeah. And what do you think they go do? They go get a puppy.
Yeah.
Well, they won't tell the housing provider because they still think it's just a dog.
Yeah.
But the puppy presents a whole new level of risk to the housing provider, and they don't even know it. Well, in our tool, they have to codify that they understand and agree that if something happens to the pet, they have to notify the property manager. And they say they agree in writing. And this is part of the tool. So if you catch them with a new dog, there is no saying, oh, I didn't know. It's now on the record. Yeah. And furthermore, they have to now bring in a new pet profile of the puppy.
Yeah.
And that scoring might be different because it's a puppy and it's not potty trained. It might nibble on the edge of the door, and that's a whole new associated risk. So the scoring is probably going to be different for a puppy than a full-grown 12-year-old black lab, right?
Yeah.
So you could see how this pet profile can be used in a lot of ways, and it really is looking at pets from A to Z, and it's really, I think, revolutionizing the pet industry for housing providers, and we're having a lot of fun doing it.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, give me a little bit of your why for this, because I mean, obviously somebody brought you a problem and you started thinking of ways to solve it. And I think any great entrepreneur, that's what they do. But personally, you know, you mentioned the Australian Shepherd. What, was there a personal why as to?
Well, you know, I think just my background in property management where, you know, I'll pick on a pit bull. I don't believe that all pit bulls are dangerous. I just don't. I think they're a function of how they're raised. Yes, they are strong, aggressive dogs. But in the industry, and my firm's guilty of it, we've always had this no guard dog policy. If your dog is one of these, we're not going to rent to you. And really, this product has opened my eyes to considering taking guard dogs if we have good information for everything else. So if you have we'll pick on a German Shepherd. You have a German Shepherd that has a microchip, that has all its shot records, that has a history of never biting anyone, biting an animal, and it's a responsible pet owner, yes, I'm definitely going to charge more because the dog is naturally a guard dog breed, but it might change the way housing providers think about animals in general. And so I don't believe all pets are equal.
Yeah.
Right. And I also don't think all pet owners are equal.
Yeah.
And so this product is really a personal mission to maybe perhaps allow housing providers to not only accept pets who've had a no pet policy. If you have a no pet policy, this is a great reason to actually think about allowing pets, because you're going to open up more applicants and you're also going to drive more revenue for you because you can use the scoring to set pricing, but you're also going to reduce your liability. That's a win for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. So one other question on you mentioned the pet owner, it made me think of, you know, another conversation that we've had too. And, you know, with student housing, you know, initially no one allowed pets. I mean, it's pretty standard now for two reasons. One, it's a way a lot of competitors found a way to set themselves apart from their markets by allowing pets. And, you know, of course that was it typically ended up being a small dog or cat or something like that. And then the other reason was because of so many of the tenants were getting ESAs and other things to either A, be able to have the pet, or B, try to skirt getting out of pet rent, pet deposits, and those kind of things. But the main reason that so many student housing providers were reluctant to rent to or allow students to have pets is because they're college students and they're not always, you know, they're. They need to be focused on studying and getting out of college. And, you know, where does a dog actually fit into that? And, you know, typically they're immature adults in a lot of ways. Now, regardless if they're immature or not, and I don't think being immature is a protected class.
Right.
But you know, you can ask age. How does the system work that into the, or does it even work that into the algorithm of, hey, this is a new pet owner, you know, because they're, I mean, you don't know if the applicant's 20 years old, do you?
Right. No, we don't. Because we're focused more on the applicant's care and then the pet itself. But we do ask not only how old is the pet, but we also ask how long have you owned the pet, which is really, kind of what you're after, because if someone ran to the pound last week and got a dog and now they're trying to apply, it is noteworthy that it might be an 8-year-old dog, but how do they really know the history if they just got it last week?
Yeah.
I will tell you that, and I'm speaking from experience, I understand at a high level the premise of having a no pet policy. The challenge is there's a real competitive disadvantage or competitive advantage, depending on your perspective, because more and more younger folks want to have a pet. And they're either going to do it with your permission or they're going to do it without. And I would just think that if you embraced pets and had a tool that could help you actually understand what it is, not only would you have a better chance of knowing what you're dealing with and have the opportunity to say yes or no, and all you really want is that right to say yes or no, but number two, you actually have a way to generate some revenue, because if you have a no pet policy, they're going to find a way to have the pet, which might mean coming back with an assistance animal application. And rest assured, it is not very difficult to go get a legitimate letter. So what's going to happen is you might be taking what would have been just a pet that you would have collected a pet rent or pet fee on because you just had an open pet policy. You're now going to change that into a perhaps an assistance animal because they went out and for $99, they really did see a therapist, because there are therapists who have businesses built around it, and they bring back a legitimate letter, even though it might seem suspect under FHA Section 504 under fair housing. It's legit. So this is why I think the tool can really open up housing providers' eyes to maybe looking at their policies again.
Yeah. John, I appreciate it.
Thank you. It's been a great time.
What's the best way for our folks to get a hold of you? And obviously, petscreening.com.
Yeah. So, you know, one thing I do want to offer to your listeners is if they send an email, if they want to learn more, if they send an email to info@petscreening.com, and if in the subject line they put in, you know, student housing insight, that way we know that it came from your listeners. We're happy to talk to them, explain the product, and if they decide to use the product, we actually will provide 1 hour of integration services, because we have a link for the pet screening application for every housing provider. We will make sure that we offer them best practices and get it integrated within their organization, and we will pay for it. And that's not me doing it, by the way. It's a real IT company that I pay to do it, but it'd be our honor to pay for that.
Cool.
And we'll do it to your listeners. They just need to send us an email, info@petscreening.com, put student housing insight in the subject, and that way I can know where it came from, and we're happy to do it. And look, this might not be for everyone, but I'll tell you, honestly, we haven't had someone tell us no yet, which tells me we're on to something good.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, yeah, I can't wait for some of my clients to
thank you
begin using it. And I think there's going to be a lot of things that we'll be able to take away from it. So,
well, happy holidays to your listeners. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, John. I appreciate it. All right, guys, that's it. Petscreening.com. Make sure you go and check them out. A lot of great information. Would like to hear back from you guys that either are currently using the service, or maybe you've got more questions about it as well. Would love to. Anyway, if you end up taking John up on his offer, would love to hear back from you and understand, you know, what your feelings are about the service and if it's helping you guys. So anyway, take care till next week, and you guys make it a great week. Thanks. Bye.